of tariff rates. How these latest tensions will play out is anybody's guess. It is possible that a Trump-Xi meeting will take place, which would be desirable from the standpoint of removing obstacles to trade. Otherwise, we can expect a resumption of tit-for-tat tariff increases that, as before, will bring U.S.-China trade to a halt. Some Congress members are calling for decoupling trade with China. If recent history is any guide, the Chinese will benefit more or be harmed less than will the U.S. Trump's tariff policy has caused alarm in corporate circles, raised prices for consumers, and cast U.S. reliability in doubt abroad. The U.S. stock market slid 2% on October 10 in response to Trump's tariff announcement. China, on the other hand, has been able to reorient trade and investment to the global south while rapidly developing its own capabilities in semiconductor chips, thereby reducing reliance on the U.S. Negotiations, not bullying, are the only answer. I'm Mel Gertal for The Global Citizen. Thanks for listening.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News for Tuesday, October 14, 2025. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-801-1378. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Josh Salem, Jessenia Hawthorne, and Mel Gertov. The producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Isabelle Charlet, Edwin J. Vieira, Antonia Gonzalez, and Mike Moen. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Eric Leuschner. All of our KBOO programs, including the Evening News, are supported by our members. If you would like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to the number 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News in depth.
KBOO News in Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
You are listening to KBOO News in Depth. I'm Althea Billings. Portland protesters have been steadfast in their commitment to showing up at the McAdam Ice facility night after night. Increasingly, that involves inflatable animal costumes, a stark contrast to the militarized ICE agents. KBOO reporter Jessenia Hawthorne talked to some protesters on Friday night.
Do you mind introducing yourself?
Hi, my name is Deborah.
Can you describe your fit today for our listeners?
So today I am a pink axolotl. I am repping some Bible verses to talk about how we should treat immigrants.
Could you read the sign for us?
I'll read the nice side. For I was hungry, and you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty, and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger, and you invited me in. Matthew 25:35.
All right, what brings you out here tonight?
Honestly, it's just, it was my birthday, and I needed to do something positive with my time. And this is the best thing that I could come up with.
Happy birthday.
Yes, happy birthday. Absolutely valid.
Thank you.
Have you been out here before? Multiple nights? First night out?
No, actually, this is my first night. I've had to be working late, and I had the opportunity tonight. And also, I managed to get this axolotl costume overnighted, so I might be out here tomorrow. I'm going to see what I can do. I'm going to be up here as much as I can.
How long have you been here today?
Not long. Actually, I just took a break. I was out here a little bit before, but maybe 45 minutes total, honestly.
Can you describe the scene from what you've seen today?
Foggy inside my inflatable costume. It's a lot of positivity, a lot of excitement, a lot of love. It's clear that the people here are fighting for what they believe in. They're here to spread positive messages and love, and you know, we don't want the hate here. You know, this is Portland. This is a place, this is a mixing pot of all the cultures, and the people we don't want here are ICE. We want everyone except for ICE.
All right, thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you. Have a great night.
Happy birthday. Do you mind introducing yourself?
Yeah, Austin.
All right, Austin, what are you doing out here in front of the ICE facility tonight?
So I'm a local nurse, actually, and just the rhetoric that I'm seeing come out of the Trump administration compared to what the reality is here on the ground is just vastly different. We had Kristi Noem out here a few days ago up on the rooftop looking down, and just a clear analysis of what she could see from the roof was just probably less than a dozen protesters out here at the time, including somebody in a chicken costume. And they are taking that back to D.C. and saying that there are terrorists out here when the reality on the ground is the absolute opposite. And it just seems they've already made up their mind that they are already deciding that it's violent down here when the clear reality is the exact opposite. People peacefully protesting and trying to protect their neighbors and trying to protect the rule of law and trying to protect freedom of speech. And that's why we're out here even in the rain today.
And what are all these boxes and supplies you have here?
So we're basically all dressing up in costume because we feel like it's the only way that we can really make clear to the public that the rhetoric coming out of the Trump administration is the exact opposite of the reality. And it's easy for them to try to distort the reality with their words, but when we're all out here in chicken costumes and frog costumes, it's very difficult for their rhetoric to stick.
And are you handing these costumes out for free?
Yeah. It's a small part. There's people who have been out here for over 100 days and have done much more than I'm doing, and it's a small part to try to help.
How many days have you been coming out here?
I've been out here for a couple weeks off and on when I can. I'm dealing with some medical issues of my own and family issues, but whenever I can get the time to get out here, I'm out here.
Amazing. Are you with a certain group out here?
There's different groups out here. I myself am kind of loosely affiliated to all this, but I mean, I think all of us just are like the commonality is Portlanders, Oregonians who are just coming out here to try to protect their rights, protect the rights of their neighbors, protect the rights of immigrants, and trying to keep the peace and show people what it's really like out here.
For anyone listening that wants to get more involved and is curious about this whole project here, what would you tell them?
Honestly, come bring, if you can't donate your time, but you can come out and donate even these ridiculous costumes, I think that's one of the clearest, low-cost, easiest ways that people right now can support. Medical supplies like saline, because people get tear gas in their eyes, spray in their eyes, masks to help with that, N95, N100 kind of style masks are helpful too.
And is there a certain group or like social media that they could be directed to know where to donate to?
It's hard to say. There, I would say just come down here and try to keep, like, even if you just come down here for an observer for an hour and just see what different parties are, come talk to these neighbors and try to see who you want to support. I know there's 50501, Indivisible are some of the big ones, Move On, but they're already starting, honestly, to get labeled wrongly as terrorist organizations by our administration. People who are just trying to peacefully protect the rights of Oregonians and American citizens. And so I would just say, if nothing else, just come down here on the ground, watch what people are saying, watch what they're doing, and look out for people that you want to try to support down here, if you can't be here yourself, or at least for a long time.
All right, thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for your time.
Do you mind introducing yourself?
My name's Bingus.
Do you mind telling me what brings you out here tonight?
I'm just sick of what our country's doing, and it's basically just the rise of fascism, you know? There's thousands of people that are just disappeared from the detention centers, and it's a terrifying thing. I think a lot more people should be standing up to do something about it.
And how many nights have you been out here?
It's my first consecutive night, but I've been out here before.
Do you mind telling me what your sign says?
My sign? This is thousands of lost detainees means that ICE are secret police.
Is there anything you'd like to say to our listeners at home that might be thinking about, I don't know, these issues or ways they can support?
It might seem like it's really dangerous out here, and there's a little bit of danger, but I think it's the right thing to do, even if it's just a bit dangerous.
Thank you so much, Bingus. Do you mind introducing yourself?
I go by Prim.
Prim, what are you doing out here tonight in front of the ICE facility?
Well, I'm one of the street medics. I've been out here for 120 days, or however long it's been since we've been out here. I just make sure everyone's safe. So I'm always observing, I'm always keeping an eye on everyone. I'm always giving medical attention as needed when we're getting gassed or when we're getting peppered, especially to new folks who come out here and don't really know what's going on. I make sure to keep them safe.
Can you tell me about your experience over the last few months coming out here?
Oh, geez. Well, my first time coming out here, I got shot at. My second time was No Kings, and I had to leave fairly mid-time because I started bleeding from the gas, and then came back, and then a couple weeks later I got detained, and so I was really brutalized on my detainment, and I wasn't really doing anything that would warrant seven of the agents on me, but that's what happened. Since that moment, I've become a little bit more radicalized. And I've been out here ever since. I mean, even before that, I was out here. I just try to keep everybody safe because we're constantly getting gassed. I mean, I've packed wounds from ballistic beanbag shots. I've packed wounds from canisters, you know, cleaned chemicals out of people's wounds and packed them and wrapped them. Like, what's happening out here is actually insane. Never in my life would have ever thought I would be a combat medic on U.S. soil, but I mean, here we are, and that's what is exactly happening.
Could you tell me a little bit about, yeah, how you got here from your training?
My training is actually in tracheotomy care and CNA work, so hospice, Alzheimer's, dementia, that sort of thing. I mean, I've done stitches and that sort of thing as well, but most of my medical experience has been in facility work. When I came out here and saw that they needed medics, I was like, okay, I could do this. And then I just started researching basic combat stuff. And as I do when I delve into something. And I've been out here ever since. And I like taking care of people. I like keeping my community safe. You know, we've had people, you know, from the community who've been survivor of a hate crime, and if it wasn't for a medic being down here, they wouldn't have gotten medical attention at all. And so, you know, that's one of the things that we do out here. As protesters, we also, since it's a 24-hour protest, we also mark how many people go into to have their meetings and who don't come out, and then how many go in the GO vans to the Tacoma Detention Center, which, let's be real, it's a concentration camp, and how many, we let them know how many are on their way, and if not all of them get there, we'll know at some point.
For anyone listening that might have some medical training or even just want to come out doing documentation, what would you like to say to them?
Come out. We need more people out here. We need more voices. You know, right now in this country, a certain narrative has been perpetrated immensely, and we need to combat that because that narrative is filled with nothing but lies and propaganda. And in fact, they created a propaganda film of a propaganda video here when they kettled us a couple days ago to make this propaganda film. It's no different than Goebbels. They're painting a narrative in order to get a certain thing called the Insurrection Act passed, and it's all lies. Excuse my language, but it's all lies. Most of the time, we are very peaceful. I mean, yes, do we heckle? Yes, but heckling is not a crime, you know. But brutalizing people is a crime, you know. When the right wing influencers and agitators come out here using the N-word and causing people from the building to use one of us protesters because they're unsafe to come out their door because of those uncivil humans, I mean, that is something PPB should be dealing with. But us protesters help our community. We help the people in the building, you know, and that's not what is being portrayed in the media. Unfortunately, we're painted as thugs. We're painted as delinquents, that we're painted as, you know, these militant terrorists, domestic terrorists, when in fact, it's furthest from the truth. It is not a crime to exercise the First Amendment, and it's patriotic to stand up for your community. Those who aren't doing so, my question is, why aren't you?
Thank you so much, Prim. Any final words?
We just welcome everybody to come out. Like, we need more people out here. We need more voices out here. We need more people observing, watching. You know, this is not just our community. This is everyone's community, and we all need to protect it. We need to protect our rights, because they are disappearing in such a rapid procession that, like, before we know it, we will have no rights. It's going to be a dictatorship. But we have the ability right now to stand up, to fight back, to speak out, to observe, to document, because this is history in the making. And, you know, like those of us who grew up reading, you know, about the Holocaust and about World War One and World War Two and the different anti-fascist movements that have happened, it is happening yet again. We are in it right now. What role in history do you want to play?
Thank you so much.
That was KBOO reporter Jezaniah Hawthorne speaking with protesters outside the Macadam ICE facility in Portland on Friday, October 10th. For KBOO News In Depth, I'm Althea Billing.
KBOO News In Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
You're listening to KBOO News In Depth. I'm Althea Billings. Starting Friday, October 17th, Heidi Duckler Dance Northwest is putting on a series of music workshops with composer Balamurali Balu. It's part of an ongoing community-based project bringing accessible arts programming to Las Adelitas in Portland's Cully neighborhood. I spoke with the composer and instructor to learn more.
Hey, I'm Bala. I'm a music producer. I primarily work on film scores and also on pop, rock, and hip-hop productions.
Very cool. Yeah. Well, you're hosting a series of music workshops at Las Adelitas starting on October 17th about music production. What will these music workshops look like?
When I do these kind of workshops, it's the first thing that excites me is it makes me to come out of my studio and interact with the humans and see the sky. And and another fascinating thing about this workshop is, like, I'm not going to talk to the musicians, which is what I usually do, right, on a day-to-day basis. This time I'm going to interact with general public who are interested in music production and want to take their first step towards the process. So the residents of Las Adelitas, I want to meet them, and I want to listen to their stories. In fact, there were like two other workshops that were done, one related to storytelling and another related to painting. I would love to get some inspiration from the stories, what they have told during the storytelling workshop, and also the paintings they have done, which was inspired from their personal lives. So I want to see how I can convert this into a sonic art form. It could be a song, or it could be a narration with a background score. I'm not sure what I'm going to do with respect to the output, but it's going to be exciting. That's what I'm very sure about.
And it's kind of for folks of all levels of familiarity with what you
exactly,
do, right?
Exactly. I said that the only requirement to attend this workshop is curiosity. So that's all they need.
Nice.
Yeah.
Let's talk about you a little bit. How did you first get into producing music?
Yeah, it happened as a happy accident, some 15 years ago when I was in a drummer for a punk rock band, and then the band got dissolved because one of the singer's girlfriend didn't like us, and then she didn't give us the basement. So I had to, I couldn't take the drum set to my house because I was living in a small cramped one bedroom apartment. So I traded in my drums for a keyboard from the band, and then I got that into my house. I had a small iMac those days, which happened to have this software called GarageBand. I hooked up my keyboard to that GarageBand. This was like in 2009-2010, around that time, and I started producing my first song. Ever since, there was no turn back, and then I upgraded to Logic Pro home studio setup. Invested a lot of thousands of dollars, but I'm happy with whatever I have right now so far. Yeah.
And you do a lot of different types of production. You mentioned film scores, but also a bunch of different genres. Is there a different approach to those different types of things?
Right. Definitely. So when I was producing these songs, when I started as a producer, I got interested in scoring for short films. So that's how I got into the film scores. And then I thought I realized it comes with a lot of knowledge base that needs to be acquired before pursuing that any further. So I joined Berklee College of Music and then pursued film scoring, orchestral composing, and everything. And then I came back to the short film industry, started scoring for films, short films, and then eventually I got into feature films. By God's grace, I have composed music for a dozen of feature films so far. And while working with film scoring, it's a completely a different sonic spectrum that we need to fill in when compared to hip hop or pop or rock, right? The choice of instrumentations, the template what we have in the DAW to come up with the ideas, everything is different. So it's like more like like two personality in one. When I'm working on a song, I wear a completely different hat, and then a film scoring is like a completely different genre for me.
I would imagine film scoring is much more focused on mood, right?
Exactly. We basically need to understand what the director has in his mind. Sometimes the music can be one additional character that is not there on the screen. There could be two persons talking, but it needs the third character to say what the scene is about, and that could be the music sometimes. Yeah.
So in that case, if someone brings you a short film that they want you to score, what is your process? You watch it through, no music, you make notes where you feel that maybe tension should build or there should be a release. And do you have, like, where, how do you map those things out? That's interesting.
So the first thing is, like, if possible, I will first read the script before even watching the film, because the script will tell exactly what the director or the writer had in mind. Sometimes that might not have been conveyed on the screen because of the budget constraints or the actors, they couldn't extract the essence from the actors. A lot of other things could go wrong during the film shoot. So I usually try to read the script first and then see the first cut edit to see how much of the script has been translated on screen. And then I sit with the director and say that this is what I think and this is what we need to work on. And then he will have some inputs. And sometimes the director will come from come with a temp score, or the editors, while editing it, they find it useful to have a temp score to convince the director, or else the director will ask for more revisions. So they always try to come up with some temp scores to get like the first good impression from the director, and then it will make their job easier. But sometimes it makes the composer's job tough, right? Because the director would have watched the film with the temp score 20 to 30 times. Now when I try to compose something new, he will be like completely thrown away. So so those things I need to be mindful about. Sometimes the director will mute the temp score when they give it to me, so I always I will make sure, was there a temp score? If so, can I get a copy of that? I want to see what it is and how we can deviate from that, or how much can we stick to that. All these things I want to talk to the director first before working on something, or else it will make my life miserable.
Well, it sounds you mean a very collaborative type of work. How do you sort of approach that, especially because sometimes those tight collaborations when there's like a product at hand can be tense if you have a different vision?
That's true. That's very, very true. The first thing is to make friends with the director and the editor. If you're good friends, then your job becomes easier. So it's the creative process will always come with this double-edged sword called creative differences, right? There could be creative friendships and creative differences also happen. So at the end of the day, it's all about trying something new and then showing them even before thinking that they might reject. I'll say that, okay, hey, today I'm going to try something out, a new sonic spectrum for this scene. If it doesn't work out, it's okay. I'll save that in my song bank or theme bank. I could use it for some other score or some other movie, right? Because when I go in that path, I always discover new sounds, which I could say that it's mine, right? So I always try to do something like that first. And if it doesn't get approved, I will use it in some other movie and then follow the temp score for this one. Yeah.
I'm curious, has there ever been, I don't know, a motif or something that you've held on to for a long time that hasn't gotten used, or you've been waiting for the right moment to
A lot.
Implement? Yeah.
A lot. I have a lot of those cues in my hard drive, which has been accumulating and collecting dust for a very long time. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, sometimes I even forget that was done. So whenever I feel very sad or depressed, I'll just open up my hard drive and see 2021 song number 3, 2019 song number 1. I'll listen to those things, and probably I'll get inspired by that and compose something new as well.
Who do you envision as the folks that should come?
Like I said, I don't want to have any restrictions on the audience. I want everyone to participate. I want more of the non-musicians who are curious about music to participate. Because in this workshop, I'm going to cover some of the AI tools that can be used for music production. For that, all you need is curiosity and interest in doing something with music. Yeah, anybody who is interested could come. And if you're a musician, that's well and good. If you can play a guitar or you can sing, or even if you can write lyrics, it's going to be like a fun playground. I don't know the musicality of the people who have signed up so far. I'm going to discover it on Friday. Based on what they bring on to the table, I'm going to decide what I'm going to teach them. I'm going with a very open mind to the workshop.
What do you wish people knew about music production, composing, the work that you're doing regularly?
Like, I would talk about the film scoring. When people watch a movie, there's a reason it's called a background score, because it's in the background. Nobody notices it, except for big names like Hans or John Williams. Nobody notices what's going behind the scenes. I would love if they know about who did the work they like, which made that movie memorable for them. So it's a wish, actually. It's a wish if they after the movie gets over, when the credits start scrolling, I would love for people to see the people standing and seeing the rolling credits instead of going outside the theater. It always disheartens me when people leave when my name comes. All right.
So get curious about who scored the films that you like.
Yeah, not only scoring, editing, yeah. Photography, everything. Yeah.
What do you hope folks walk away from this workshop with?
I want them to walk away with a very personal music product. It could be a song, or it could be a narration with a background score, or it could be just an instrumental recording. I want them to walk away with some form of audio, like an MP3 file, that they could say that, hey, I did this. So that's the goal.
Do you have any final thoughts?
I'm very, very excited, at the same time a little nervous, because I don't know who's going to come to this workshop. I think the first half an hour will be more about knowing what music background they have, and then I need to reverse engineering for the first half an hour to make sure that I go on the right path. So yeah, that's the final thought.
It's very exciting. Yeah. Thank you so much for coming in to talk with us about it.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
That was Bala Murali Balu, the composer and music producer, heading up a series of music workshops with Heidi Duckler Dance Northwest. The first workshop is on Friday, October 17th at 5 p.m. at Las Adelitas in Portland's Cully neighborhood. That's at 6735 Northeast Killingsworth Street. More information is online at HeidiDucklerDanceNorthwest.org. For KBOO News in Depth, I'm Elsa.
KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM in the Portland area and all over the world at kboo.fm.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934